Hello, world, and welcome to another episode of Polar Opposites. That's the PO Show, right here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Big T, and as always, I'm joined by my main man, my friend, your friend, soon to be everybody's friend. Show some love for Mr. Cool Hand Phil. Phil, how are you, sir?
Terrence, I'm doing okay. You know, in the sports world, there's always a winner and a loser. Right now, I'm losing the battle with these allergies and the allergy season. But other than that, I'm doing fantastic. I'm looking forward to another great show that I know that you have planned out for us this evening.
Well, you know, as always, it's been an unbelievable week in sports and so many stories to get to and cover. But we will begin this show like we do every single show as adults. You make plenty of decisions every single day, and we're just glad you decided to spend just a little bit of time with us right here on the PO Show. And Phil, you said it, there's so much to get into. There's so much that has happened since last week. So much that has happened in the sports world since we last spoke. I mean, we got ourselves a new Masters champion. 21-year-old Jordan Spieth showed us all what it's like to be a 21 golf phenom. In the NBA, they're coming around the stretch. The regular season ends here tomorrow, and all eyes, as we mentioned last week, are on that eighth place seed in the West. Who will it be, New Orleans or OKC? Must-win situations for both teams there. Also in the NBA last night, the Splash Brothers, or at least one half of the Splash Brothers, Klay Thompson, was in full effect last night, scoring 42 points, 26 of those coming in just the second quarter. He becomes the only player in NBA history to have a 20-plus point quarter twice in the same season. So, matter of fact, Phil, let's go ahead and get started in the conversation. And I want to start off taking a look back at the Masters and this historic run that the 21-year-old had. Going into it, there were a lot of people. I mean, this really shouldn't come as much of a surprise that he was able to win. But there were a lot of people that had him picked as the odds-on favorite. I think they thought that maybe Rory would have had a bigger play in it, or it may have been closer. You know, I don't think anybody saw him going wire to wire. But the fact that he played well and that he won, I don't think is any shock. Because if you remember, he had a great showing last year, Phil, and I think he finished second last year. But when you look at his performance, obviously you immediately have to draw parallels. You have to draw comparisons to what Tiger did at 21. Of course, Spieth, he finishes 18 under, identical to Tiger's record. He breaks the Masters course record, again, doing it at 21, just like when Tiger was there. And at one point, Phil, he actually had the record at 19 under, missed a routine putt, brought him back down to 18. Here's my question for you, Phil. Looking at this year's Master, looking at the incredible record-breaking run that he had, who had the greater Masters finish? 21-year-old Tiger or 21-year-old Jordan Spieth?
You know, I'm going to go with Tiger. You know, just if you look at it on the surface, you have to go Tiger because Tiger won his tournament like by a record 12 strokes. Mm. You know, when you look at the field, and this past weekend, you know, you had second place like at 14 under. So just by Tiger being so dominant as far as the field not even being close to him, to me that's more of a dominating performance on the front end. But if you kind of dig into it, you know, what Jordan Spieth did, I think was just as impressive as what Tiger did, because he did it from Thursday to Sunday. You know, he led the field. And I think that's, they showed a stat that has only been done four times.
Correct.
In the history of the Masters, where someone has been a leader after day one and then goes on to win the tournament. So I think that took a little bit of the excitement out of it, because by him shooting a 64 on the first day, the tournament was over pretty much as soon as it began. Whereas Tiger, I think when he finished 18 under, that Sunday round that he put together was just unbelievable. So that made it exciting because, I mean, he just, you know, exploded on the scene where, you know, he may have had like a 4-stroke lead going into the final round, and then he shoots something like 8 under that Sunday. That made it seem more impressive, but when you look at what Jordan did over the whole tournament, I think that was impressive. You know, he got to 19 under, like you said, which is the record. No one has ever been at 19 under
right.
at the Masters.
Right. So
at any point. So I thought that was impressive, and, you know, I was wrong about the kid. When I saw him play last year, not only in the Masters, but I think there was one other major tournament last year where he choked in the last day. And so I said, you know, I just don't think he's going to be a factor going forward. You know, because we said the same thing about Rory whenever he collapsed the final day of the Masters. But I was impressed by how he handled himself. But then he went on and won another major that year, and he broke the record. I think it was the U.S. Open where he won by the most strokes ever. So, you know, he bounced back quickly. So I am impressed with Jordan because I didn't think he had the makings to win this major.
Sure.
But yeah, it was impressive. I just think what Tiger did on that one Sunday, for whatever reason, it just seemed like it had a bigger impact. But I think it's because he did so much on the last day, whereas Jordan put together just a phenomenal week.
And look, and you said it right. I mean, what 21-year-old Tiger did at that Masters was extremely impressive because of the dominance. And we've never seen that type of dominance at the Masters. And quite frankly, I don't think we'll ever see that type of dominance again. But for the same reasons that you were impressed with 21-year-old Tiger, those are the same reasons that I'm impressed with what Jordan did in this year's Masters. In that, his win to me, a little bit more impressive because the pressure was on him the whole time. He didn't have the comfort of a 12-stroke lead to just sit back and chill. He had a crafty, wily veteran in Phil Mickelson just 4 strokes behind him on the final day. So he didn't have the opportunity, Phil, to play it safe or to lay up on certain shots. He had to be aggressive the entire tournament to win. And as you mentioned, we've seen him in the past in those situations in the driver's seat and fall apart. So by the fact that he has done that in the past and was able to overcome the moment, the spotlight, however you want to say it, the fact that he was able to overcome the same things that plagued him in previous big tournaments, I think that says a lot about the young champion, and I think it gives us a lot to look forward to going forward, which brings up the next question. When you look at the state of the PGA right now, you know, you mentioned how because he led the entire tournament, took away some of the drama, but you did have, like I said, Phil Mickelson there just a few strokes back. But to your point, it could have been more dramatic if you had Spieth and Rory battling back and forth, right, going down on the final day, which begs the question, what is in store for the future of golf in terms of what's the matchup that everybody wants to see? Is it Jordan and Rory going head-to-head in the final pairing? Or does Tiger and Mickelson, does that still resonate with golfers? What's the better matchup? What matchup do you want to see on Sunday?
Yeah, man, I think if right now the community of golf in America, they would rather see Tiger and Mickelson. And I think the reason that is because that's a proven, I don't know if you'd call it matchup, but I mean, it's a proven thing in golf where they've seen these guys compete. They have multiple Masters. They have several majors. I think Phil is looking to get the career Grand Slam. Tiger already has it. So so because that product has already been there and that's what we're familiar with, I think that is the bigger draw. Now, do we look forward to the future of golf because of guys like Rory and guys like Jordan? Yes. But I think if you polled America and they said, hey, who would you rather see, you know, in the next major? Is that going to be the British Open maybe? But they said, who would you like to see coming down the stretch, maybe a one-stroke lead between the two? I think America would vote for Mickelson and Tiger. And these guys are still relevant. I don't know if Tiger will ever get it back. I'm just not sure. You know, because you just hear some of the things that he's talking. And Terrence, let me ask you this. This is going to be completely out of left field. But is Tiger, is he kind of losing it a little bit? And I mean, is he like getting off his rocker? You know, he just makes up these stories. Like, I don't know if you watched the final round where he tried to hit the shot.
Right.
And his club caught a root.
Right.
That was in the ground. And in his interview, he said his bone popped out and his tendon popped out of his finger and he popped it back in. But, you know, the camera, you know, there's a camera that's on Tiger the whole time. They never showed him popping a tendon or a bone back in. And, you know, you look at when he lost a tooth, when he went over to Switzerland or whatever to watch Lindsey Vonn ski. You know, it just seems like there's all these weird stories. You know, he said a cameraman bumped his tooth and it was bleeding everywhere. But if you go back and look at the pictures, there was never any blood on his shirt or the mask that he had. I mean, it's just, it seems like there's just strange things that he just kind of making up. I just want to know, is he kind of losing it a little bit, or am I just making too much up of some of the funny stories and the funny excuses that he has?
Oh, it's clearly much ado about nothing feeling. I'm disappointed that you would take the bait and jump on that bandwagon. I too heard the stories about, and you know, and I've heard people report how the story changed from interview to interview. At first it was a joint, then it was a bone, and this, listen, he's a golfer, okay? So maybe he isn't well versed in all the technical terms of the anatomy of the hand. Look, what we do know is this: he took a swing, he hit a root, and it had some physical effect on the body, yet he played through it. Now, if we were talking about he hit a root, he did something to his hand, and he withdrew from the tournament, then we have a story. Then we have something to talk about. And then you could say, you know, hey, this dude's gone crazy. But the fact that he gutted it out, you know, in fact, if I'm not mistaken, he probably eagled the two holes later. So it's a non-issue, I think. If it happens in another two tournaments or so, then I might be inclined to say that he's, you know, will say and do whatever to get in the spotlight. Yeah. But I think at this point, I think it's the media making way too much about, you know, they need a Tiger story. You know what I mean? And that was the closest thing they could come to a story there. But back to the subject at hand, I agree with you, but for different reasons. I agree. I would rather, and I think most of the golf fan community would rather see Tiger and Phil versus Rory and Jordan. And the reason I think that is because, quite honestly, that's unfinished business, Phil. We as fans got robbed of seeing that rivalry play itself all the way out because of Tiger's untimely demise and departure and then back and, you know, everything that's happened since that fateful November 9th. But I feel like as fans, we kind of got robbed of the rivalry when it was good. I mean, it was at its greatest, you know, right at that point. And we never got the chance to really see how that played out. Because if you can remember then, at that point, that's the only guy that we could say that could stare Tiger down face to face, nose to nose, you know, and pair with him on the final day and not be shaken. That's why, in my opinion, I feel like that's a better pairing. You're right. What we saw from Jordan Spieth, what we've seen and continue to see from McIlroy, yes, golf is in good hands. With or without Tiger, golf is in good hands. And I think that is so evident by what we saw at the Masters, not just because of Jordan's record-breaking win, But the fact that he had that type of game to go 18 under for the weekend and still have a slew of golfers just four strokes behind, that right there tells you golf's in good hands. Go ahead.
Well, you know, and I don't know so much if we were robbed. I mean, I don't think Phil was up to the task to ever really challenge Tiger. Now, could he still have won a major if Tiger was still in his prime? Yeah, he probably could have snuck up on Tiger or someone else and won a major. But once Tiger was out, I mean, it's not like Phil took over. So, I mean, I don't think Phil Mickelson is the match for Tiger or that rivalry that Tiger needs to challenge him. Because if that was the case, once Tiger went out, then Mickelson would have won, you know, another three majors, and it hasn't happened. And to me, that's the biggest problem with golf is the inconsistency. And I think you and I have discussed this before, but, you know, if you look over at kind of a contemporary sport like tennis,
right,
where there was a stretch there for probably about 6 years where every major final had Federer and Nadal in it.
Right.
You know, either one of those guys won pretty much every single major tournament. And to me, that's what golf is lacking. These guys, they don't show up every single week, not even for the Masters. I mean, here we'll go to the British Open in a couple weeks, and Jordan Spieth will miss the cut. I mean, it'll be something like that,
right,
to where the guys just don't show up. And that's what drives me crazy, is you can't look forward to a tournament and know, hey, I'm going to turn this thing on Sunday, and Mickelson, Dustin Johnson, Rory, Spieth, and Tiger, you know, are all going to be within three strokes of the lead,
right,
or the leader. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, but I think you
go ahead.
I think you missed my point on that. I'm not saying so much that Phil could overtake Tiger, or that Phil, or even to say Phil was an even match. What I'm saying to you, though, is what made that rivalry great for me is that Phil didn't back down. He would be there, and he would still play Phil Mickelson's game, taking chances, wild shots. He didn't fall apart because he was paired with Tiger like so many others did. And to your point that after Tiger left, Phil didn't take over the sport because Phil needed Tiger. Phil plays his best when he's facing down Tiger. And that was my point. It was a rivalry where you always knew what you were going to get from Tiger. But on any given Sunday, you didn't know what you were going to get from Phil unless he was paired with Tiger. And then you saw Phil at his best. That was my point.
Yeah, but, you know, I've always argued that mentality, too. I've never bought into the fact that Tiger makes the field wilt. You know, because even though Tiger the last few years has been, you know, pretty much non-existent, these guys still falter at the end, just like last year. Jordan Spieth, you know, he faltered the last day and just crumbled. Well, Tiger was nowhere around, and I think it's just these guys that do that. And so it was easy to point and say, you know, because Tiger was so consistent that he was always in the, you know, last day. He's trying to win the tournament. And so when the other guys would falter, it was easy to point and say, oh, Tiger was the reason. But once Tiger went away, these guys still choked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Rory choked, Tiger was nowhere around. Last year when Jordan Spieth choked in the two majors, Tiger was nowhere around. So I think that's just part of the sport. And it was easy to say it was because of Tiger, but I think Tiger was just there. He's consistent. He doesn't choke. It's just not in his nature.
Right.
So he was always there to benefit from the other guys. But when Tiger went away, those guys still did it. So I've always kind of argued against that point. I don't buy into that, because if that was the case, you still would not see these guys choke week in, week out.
Right. And you're right. Now that's an argument that we've had many and many a times of what happened to these other players going down the stretch. And, you know, with Tiger's game kind of fading away, you know, we don't know, or at least that argument is unsettled. But when you talk about heading down the stretch, you got to look at what's going on here in the NBA season. As it starts to wind down, a lot of team fields seem to be getting in position, gearing up for these playoffs. But right now, like I said, at the top of the hour, all eyes are on the Western Conference and that eighth place seed. We talked about it last week as the race for eight. And it's come down to the last game of the season tomorrow night. New Orleans currently holds the head-to-head. So if they both win or they both lose, New Orleans is in. If New Orleans wins and OKC loses, New Orleans is in. The only way that OKC can make it into this year's playoffs, OKC has to win and New Orleans has to lose. And let me go ahead and set the table for this, Phil. You've got OKC playing Milwaukee. So by all accounts, that should be an OKC win. Should be, okay? And you've got the New Orleans playing the Spurs. And this one, you don't, with Greg Popovich, you don't know what you're going to get. You don't know if he's going to try to rest his starters. You don't know if, because let me tell you, the Spurs have a little bit at stake. They currently sit in the second place seed. A win would lock up that seed. But if they were to lose and a million other things happens, they could fall as low as sixth. And if you look at the numbers on this, Phil, historically speaking, the teams that have finished or won the West, let's say, the teams that have won the Western Conference have historically been a number one or two seed, and a few times a number three seed, but never lower than a three seed. So it's really hard, like I said, it's hard to know what Greg Popovich is thinking. It's hard to figure out what he's going to do in terms of a lineup. If they're going to try to win, if they're going to rest players, I don't know. But I've set the table, but you tell me, who locks up this eighth place seed tomorrow night? Will it be Golden State playing the OKC Thunder in the first round of the playoffs, or will they be playing the New Orleans Hornets?
Well, when I look at it now, that game tomorrow night, is that at San Antonio or is it in New Orleans?
Let me see. If I'm not mistaken, I believe that is going to be a home game for the Spurs. Don't quote me on that, but I believe that is a home game for the Spurs.
You know, because usually, you know, Popovich usually likes to sit his guys when they go on the road. So you got to think that the starters will be playing tomorrow night. And, you know, the Spurs, defending champions, still a very good team. You got to say the favor goes with Oklahoma City because they're playing Minnesota, who has only won 16 games this year.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it looks like they're going to have an easier go at it than what New Orleans does. But, you know, with New Orleans having so much on the line, knowing that they can control their destiny with the win, I mean, it's not, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if they won. But I'm going to say that Oklahoma City wins just because of the record, and I don't think they're going up against nearly as good of talent, and I just think the Pelicans have their work cut out for them having to face the Spurs.
And that may be the truth, and let me make a correction. I was incorrect. It is actually a home game for New Orleans. That game will be held in New Orleans. So
that place will be rocking.
Oh, my goodness. It'll be, even though it's the last game of the season, it will clearly have a playoff atmosphere. I mean, that, for all practical purposes, will be a playoff game and a playoff atmosphere in New Orleans. I tell you, I would rather see the Pelicans win this game because I think the Pelicans would bring more of an exciting game in that first round. And the reason I say that is because OKC knows they aren't going anywhere in the playoffs without Kevin Durant, without Serge Ibaka, who's also injured currently. They know they're not going anywhere. So, you know, rather than have a team go in there and get beat four straight games and get swept, I'd rather see a team that's actually fighting for something, actually trying to stay alive. And I don't know, maybe New Orleans creates some type of matchup difficulties. I doubt it. I mean, we're talking about the best record in the league in Golden State. Although, as fast as I say that, although it would be interesting a couple of games to watch a Russell Westbrook and a Steph Curry, you know, going back to back. But I think for my viewing dollar, give me New Orleans and Golden State. I'm kind of over this Russell Westbrook show that we've been seeing these past couple of weeks, the living triple-double. And I think you said it best. I mean, yeah, the dude's scoring, he's getting these triple-doubles, but his team is still losing. So I can't get too excited about an eighth-place team that barely got in on the last day of the season, and their number one guy's, you know, getting triple-doubles every night. Yeah, I'm enough of that. I would much rather see the others. Now, in that same conversation of those two teams, Golden State, OKC, their stars, Steph Curry, Russell Westbrook, have been mentioned in the MVP cap conversation. Now, I think it's pretty clear because of the record that OKC has, we can go ahead and omit Russell Westbrook, although the great season that he's had, we can omit him from the conversation, and let's go ahead and insert the Houston Rockets star, the Beard himself. Why his name just escaped me, I have no idea. James Harden. That's really what the race comes down to, Steph Curry and James Harden. Who has the most compelling argument, Phil, for the league MVP?
I think it's Steph Curry. Now, I am impartial to him. I fell in love with his game in March Madness a few years back. Mm-hmm. I never thought he would be able to evolve into a serviceable NBA player. And I don't even mean star. I just mean I didn't think he would be a starter on an NBA team. I just didn't think he had the size and the strength and all those things. I knew he had the skill set, but didn't know if he had the strength to play the NBA game. And he has proven me wrong, and I'm so very happy about it. There is no one more fun to watch in the NBA today than Steph Curry. And I feel like he is probably the best player in the history of the game, pound for pound. You know, they do that in boxing. You know, who's the best fighter, pound for pound? You know, we know Muhammad Ali is great, but let's talk about pound for pound so we can include some of the smaller guys that have achieved a lot. So, to me, he is the greatest player, pound for pound, that I have ever seen. And when you look at the stats, when you look at how efficient that he is, he still gets assists. Still does things without the ball. He can create shots with his dribble. And then also, there's been 18 games this year. 18 games, that's like, what, a fourth of the season that he has not played in the fourth quarter. Not a minute. You know, and I'm sure there's other games where he played 2 minutes in the fourth quarter and sat out. But, you know, you look at all the stats that he's put up. He broke his own three-point season record. Well, you know, let's calculate how many threes does he average a quarter. So let's times that by the 18 quarters that he's missed. You know, he would have obliterated that record. You know, his points per game would be up. So, and I feel like when you play on the best team and you're able to put up those types of numbers, I think that really speaks to what he does and how efficient he is. And I mean, I think there was a point where he was shooting like 60% from the three-point line. So, to me, if you play on that good of a team and you put those numbers, that means something because that's what the MVP stands for, the most valuable player. As you mentioned with Westbrook, he can't be that valuable if he's not winning games. Right. I mean, anybody can put up numbers, but it's not valuable if you're not even making the playoffs. So, you know, you look at the Houston Rockets sitting in fifth place in the West, you know, I just have to go Steph Curry. I'm not taking anything away from Harden, but, you know, he shoots a lot of shots to get his stats where he is. So I'm leaning Steph Curry.
Oh, yeah.
Who do you have?
Oh, yeah. It's hands down for me, Steph. You know, you brought up an interesting point there that, you know, we didn't think that he was going to that his game was going to translate at the next level. And that's really not, and I had the same thought too, Phil, but I don't blame him personally for that. I really have to blame that on those before him. Because before that, we had J.J. Redick, who was just lights out in college, got to the pros. I mean, he is just now coming into his own, you know. I mean, he struggled mightily the first several years. And then after that, we had Jimmer Fredette, lights out at the collegiate level. And, I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find this kid on the bench, let alone in the, you know, on the court. He's playing somewhere, getting minutes, but not at the level that he was in college. So I don't, you know, I don't, to no fault of his own, to no fault of Stephen Curry's own, you're right, a lot of us didn't think his game was going to translate because what we'd seen from those college shooters years previous, but he proved us all wrong. And just to show you, I don't know if you saw this, Phil. In fact, I just stumbled across it right now as we were talking. Just to show you how unbelievable lights out this kid is. Tuesday, at practice today, okay, at practice today, Steph Curry made 77 straight threes at practice and finished 94 of 100. That's crazy on a whole lot of levels. A, it's crazy that he's just that good of a sharpshooter, A. But B, he's so committed to the craft that he shoots 100 threes at practice. This kid is something special. And if you're right. If you get a chance to see him play, you got to. One of the reporters that was at practice tweeted out, I remember reading it at some point, tweeted out, "I'm sitting here watching Steph Curry make threes at practice." And they said, "I would pay the full price of a ticket to watch this. You know, forget a game. I would pay full price of a ticket just to watch that pure stroke." That,
we're talking about practice. Yeah. We're talking about practice.
Just talking about practice. So, yeah, hands
not,
down.
Not a game.
Oh, yeah, not a game. Not a game that I love, but just practice. You know, there's something else that I think that's noteworthy about Steph Curry and his game. You know, we talked about in the open how Klay Thompson went off for 42 points the other night. Now, I know I'm going to ruffle some feathers, but Kobe, Russell Westbrook, I need y'all to listen to me for a second, all right? It really says a lot about your game when you know you're the best player on the team, but somebody else is hot, and you say, you know what? Hey, go ahead. Get yours. I mean, we just talked about it. The kid knocked down 77 straight threes, so he knows he can get his, but he was recognized that Klay Thompson was on another one of those heaters, and instead of him taking shots away, he was like, here, keep going. Do you. I think Steph finished with something like 13 or 15 points, you know, a pedestrian-type game, while the team continued to feed Klay Thompson because he was obviously on fire again. You would never see that from Russell Westbrook. If Kevin Durant was hot, you think Westbrook's going to give up his shots? Not going to happen, you know. So that's another reason why he's a league MVP, because he has that type of awareness of what's going on in the game, what's going on his team. So he clearly gets my vote.
Yeah, and we've seen that. You know, in the playoffs, there was a game where the Thunder were down by, I think, like 7 points, something like that. They come down, Kevin Durant, bang. Come down again, Kevin Durant, bang. Come down again, Westbrook drives to the basket, throws it off the backboard. You know, and it was only like 20 seconds left in the game then, and that's when I lost all respect for it. And that's why I just can't vote for this guy. Now, if he was in first place doing it after Durant went out, then I'd say, okay, yeah, you know, he's getting triple-doubles and they're winning. He's turned the team around, but that hasn't happened. But whenever I saw a point guard like that where you cannot recognize who the hot hand is, then I have no business, I have no need for you at the point guard position. You are there to facilitate the offense. And if you go back, you made a good point about that game where I think it was last night, you know, where he had the 26 points. Klay Thompson had 26 points. But earlier in the year, when I can't remember, he set a record – I think it was like 13 for 13 in that quarter.
Right.
It was like 30-something points. I mean, it was just ridiculous. But if you go back and watch, there's a clip on YouTube, but they show how the play developed. They don't just show him making the shot. And you can see the guys. And it's a team. It's not just Steph Curry. But as a team, they recognize, you know, who the high, and they were looking for him. You know, they're passing it to him. They're not going to anywhere else. They're not looking for their shot. And, you know, for you to say, hey, listen up, Kobe and Westbrook, I think that's a very good point. And I can't even fault Kobe because he is the guy. He is the one that you want mm-hmm. to take the shot. Even though I think, you know, I still think he's a little bit insecure and all those things. And I think he would rather perform at a high level than win. I think he wants to be the main guy more than he wants to win just because of the selfishness. But he is the guy, but Westbrook was not, and he, you know, didn't have the hot hand. But if I can switch gears, if you would allow me to do this, I want to ask you about Golden State. I do not think they're going to make it to the NBA Finals. I mean, they may make it out of the first round, but I think because of their style of play, and they rely so much on the outside shot, and their game is geared towards regular season. And what I mean by that is, you know, kind of run and gun, you know, make your shots, exploit a defense that, you know, is not a playoff defense. You know, mm-hmm. they're just kind of taking mm-hmm. it easy. They played 3 nights in a row. They're tired. So you can exploit that, and it's fine, gets the crowd involved. However, when the playoffs start, it is a different game. It's a man's game, and I just don't think they're going to be able to average 109 points, almost 110 points in the playoffs
right.
like they are in the regular season. So I don't expect big things from them in the playoffs. Do you agree or disagree with that sentiment?
Well, that's really interesting, and I don't know if I've heard someone – I don't know if I've heard anyone put it that way, but you bring up a lot of good, strong points. We all know playoff basketball is completely different from regular season ball. Defenses tighten up. The rotations get shorter. The level of play, the level of hustle, the level of energy in those games, in the buildings even, is completely different. And you are so right about that. So that's one point. Phil, you know me. You know I always say, especially in a 7-game series, your coach is going to get you 1 or 2 wins. Your coach is going to make a decision. It's going to make a call. It's going to make an out-of-bounds play, something, an inbounds play, I'm sorry, something your coach is going to do that's going to get you 1, if not 2 wins in a 7-game series. And I don't know if Steve Kerr is that guy. And I'm not saying that to belittle what he's done. He's, you know, probably will end up being coach of the year. I'm saying that based on he hasn't been tested. We legitimately don't know if he's that guy. You know, we saw that Mark Jackson in previous years wasn't able to get him over the hump once they made it to the playoffs. And I don't know if Steve Kerr is. So I hadn't even thought about it till you posed the question, but you might have something there. They may not make it to the Western Conference Final, even though I would expect them to, just on paper. They do rely heavily on the jump shot, but my God, it just seems to always be there. You know, it's not, you know, you're right. They rely on it, but it just always seems to be there. And as we discussed, hey, so maybe they double-team Steph. Maybe they try to prevent him from getting the ball. Well, guess what? Klay Thompson is somewhere over in the corner getting his. So, I mean, they are a jump-shooting team. They're a really, really good jump-shooting team. So I still expect them to make it to the conference finals, or, you know, depending on how the seeding works, the conference final may end up being in another round. And what I mean by that, at any point you end up with Golden State and San Antonio going head-to-head, that's the conference final, regardless of what round it is. You know what I mean? You know, I'm not sure how that's going to work out, but if those two teams end up playing, that's going to determine who wins the West. whether it's in the final round or the semifinal, I don't know. You know, we'll have, like I said, we'll have to see how that seeding works out. But I do expect it to make it to that point, to play San Antonio. And based on what you just said, and then, of course, looking at the coaching matchup, it's hard to bet against the Spurs because of what we saw them do to Miami. You know, a motivated team, a rested team, and that's where they are right now. You know, the Spurs are healthy. You know, they've gotten all their key players back. They haven't played a lot of minutes. Popovich has managed those injuries and health issues extremely well, better than anybody else. And let's face it, Popovich has been there before, and Steve Kerr has not. I mean, that's a fascinating question you bring up. Like I said, I hadn't even thought about it. I was just automatically putting the check in the box that Golden State was going to represent the West. But you made me think on it, man, and I hate to say it, but I almost have to agree with you then. I pretty much have to agree with you.
And I don't think it'll be an indictment on Steve Kerr's coaching ability. I mean, because the style has got them to first place in the series, but it just seems like when other teams ratchet it up, and it goes back to his players, not necessarily his system, mm-hmm. but just his players. We see that in football where, you know, there's a team that's very speedy, fast, and can do all these things to disrupt the defense, but then once they get into the playoff or a conference championship or something like that, when they face a team that is physical, they can't do the things that they're used to doing. Not because their scheme is flawed, just because their personnel cannot compete or cannot deal with what the defense brings to the table. And I think that's what we're going to see in the playoffs. Not that their style of play is wrong or that it should be changed. I think based off of the personnel that they have, they are doing exactly what they are supposed to do. They're doing exactly the thing that's going to give them the best chance to win. However, whenever you get matched up with a bigger team that is more physical, and you know, it probably depends on what the refs let them get away with too, but I think it'll be hard for Steph Curry and Klay Thompson to get those shots off. And so I think their big man down low is going to have to step up and be there and get the baskets when they need it if they're stretching their defense out and trying to put hands on Thompson and Curry to prevent them from getting open. But, you know, just like you said on paper, though, teams have tried to do that, but those guys are so good at, you know, putting up a pump fake and then driving it in. So I'm kind of interested to see. I mean, that could backfire mm-hmm. on another team because they are able to get in the line. You know, you brought up J.J. Redick and Jimmer Fredette, kind of comparing him to Curry. But I think Curry is completely different than those guys because he's not just a spot shooter.
Right.
He can get to the basket. He can create plays off the dribble. I mean, that play that he did against the Clippers, I mean, there was two plays about 2 weeks apart, you know, where he made a move, went behind his back between three guys.
Oh, my goodness.
And then did a turnaway, fadeaway three-pointer. And then 2 weeks later when, you know, he destroyed Chris Paul's ankles.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, so his dribble, you know, he can create shots off the dribble, but and that's what I'm saying. I mean, he's so fun to watch. I mean, I pull up these clips, and I'm just chuckling. You know, I got a new TV
mm-hmm.
for, you know, with my tax money, and Steph Curry christened that TV with 45 points. I mean, so I was excited about that. But, you know, those guys, they can play. So, you know, maybe they'll surprise me. I want them to
right.
because I'm that big of a fan, but I'm just afraid they're going to run into a team that is going to be able to disrupt what they bring to the table.
Yeah, it's it'll be interesting to see. Like I said, I hadn't even thought about it. I appreciate you bringing that to us because that'll be very interesting to see what happens out there in the West. But just like in the West, where Golden State pretty much controls their fate, they're the number one seed hands down. Out East, Atlanta has done the exact same thing. They got the best record in the East. They control their destiny there. But their playoff run may be shortened for a different reason, Phil. One of those weird side B-side stories that has sprung up this week, and an incident where an Indiana Pacers forward, Chris Copeland, you may have heard about it, he and his girlfriend were stabbed coming outside of this club. But in a separate incident, which I just don't really understand what's going on, I mean, literally 100 feet away, two Atlanta Hawks players, Tybo Cephalosha and their center, Antic, got into some type of situation where the police had to intervene. Here's the thing. When the police intervened, they felt it necessary to use strong enough force against Cephalosha to the point where he has suffered a season-ending injury, Phil, a broken right fibula, and ligament damage. And that obviously, you know, is going to prevent him from taking part in these NBA playoffs. It's a weird story, okay, first off. It's just a weird story that two NBA players at a club in New York City, and that part I don't understand why there were Pacers and Atlanta Hawks players in New York during the season. I mean, because both of them couldn't have been playing New York that day. So that part's weird anyway, but neither here nor there. It's weird to me that two NBA players would be involved in altercations. And again, it's said to be separate incidents. But the part that really raises some eyebrows, Phil, is we're talking about police brutality in New York City. Yeah, stop me if you've heard this one before. But the crazy, I don't get it. I mean, and I don't know how much you've heard of the story, how much you read on the story, but I need somebody to help me understand how an unarmed man, I don't care how tall he is, but how an unarmed man finds himself in a situation where not only his livelihood has been jeopardized, but, you know, is physically wounded by a police officer. And for lack of a better term, Phil, it seems like, let me preface by saying this, I have not seen the video footage personally, but as it has been described to me, the police officer, it would almost seem that he targeted the knee and the leg with a nightstick, billy club, whatever you want to call it, that looks like what produced the injury. Is this the question, Phil? Is this fair or foul? Was the officer operating, best you know, you feel like the officer was operating well within the means of the law? Or is this another out-of-bounds play by NYPD?
Yeah, I mean, and I did see the video, and it happened so fast. It seemed like the video cut in probably about a minute after they got into it, but usually I always side with the police officers, and it's the way I was raised. You know, my parents told me if someone in authority tells you to do something, you do it. It doesn't matter if it's your boss, it doesn't matter if it's your teacher or police officer. So I can't understand if I'm walking down the street and I have done nothing wrong, and a police officer comes to me and says, put your hands up, get on your knees, put your hands behind your back, I'm doing it. I'm not asking questions, but you could tell that Cephalosha was not cooperating. You know, they're trying to get him handcuffed or, you know, and he's just not having it. Now, I wouldn't say he was fighting, but you could tell that he was not cooperating. And the way I look at it is, if I was a police officer and I have a deadly weapon on me, and I tell someone to comply, and they are a big, strong, powerful individual, then I'm using force, because if they make up their mind, you know, if they're resisting arrest and they make up their mind that they want this gun, I'm going to have a very tough time keeping them from getting to that weapon. So I always side with the police officer. I don't understand why people just can't obey what a police officer says. You know, we can straighten everything else out later. Okay. You know, I don't have a broken leg, but that's why you will never hear about me or my children, you know, having the leg broken. You're never going to hear about my children being a Michael Brown, not because they're white, but because they will not escalate the situation. When a police officer tells them to do something,
right,
they will comply. And to me, the Cephalosha would have said, oh, yes, sir, officer. Yeah, you want handcuffs? Okay. And then you figure it out later. You got lawyers.
But that sounds good when you say that, Phil. And if everything was equal, you're exactly right. But unfortunately, there's a precedent that has been set and established in this country that would make you not necessarily want to automatically bow down and comply, because you don't know what that officer's going to do. The young man on a New York City sidewalk, he complied, and he told him, hey, I can't breathe. They said, shut up. He died. So I can't necessarily.
That's not how it happened. They told him to, you know, he was a big man. They told him to put his hands on his back, and he would not do it. And that went on for however long. Backups came. He still wouldn't put his hands behind his back to get handcuffed. And, you know, they put the chokehold on him for what I counted. I think it was 6 seconds. I don't think that's enough to kill someone. I think he was overweight, probably had asthma, and that's what triggered. I don't think that guy getting him in the chokehold.
That's fine. That's fine. But if I say to you, I can't breathe, that needs to be
checked. But he wasn't grabbing his neck at that. That's what I'm saying. He wasn't grabbing his neck.
Well, how could
he had him for 6 seconds.
How could he grab his
neck? If you watch the video, he had him for 6 seconds in that chokehold, and then they were still trying to subdue him, and he was saying, I can't breathe. So, I mean,
My point that I'm making to you is that there's been too many situations in recent history that would.
But who started? That's what I'm saying. If the guy in New York had said, officer, what's this about? Oh, well, you know, we saw you selling illegal cigarettes. Oh, okay. Put your hands behind your back and you can work it out later. That's what I'm saying is, if a white person, and the reason you never hear about this is because it's not a story. The media knows that no one cares about a white person being, you know, if they resist arrest. That happens every day.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't read about it because they're white and media can't sell that.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is, if a police officer comes to me and says, put your hands behind your back, if I'm supposed to be afraid of that police officer, and I am, I'm afraid of police.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I do what they say. I'm not going to sit there and argue with a guy that has a taser, a gun, pepper spray. I'm not arguing with him. He says, get on the ground, guess where I'm at, Terrence? Guess where I'm at? I'm on the ground, and I just don't understand why people cannot comply with that. And then when it escalates and they have to use force, they have a problem with it. That is the fact. That is not the cause.
Okay, well,
it's just my opinion.
Okay, that's fine.
And I know you won't agree with it, but I just don't understand. If Cephalosha would have said, yes, sir, put his hands on his back, he's playing basketball tonight.
Well, and I can't agree with it because I'm coming at it from a different spot, Phil. I give you real world, real life example. Not a hypothetical, a real deal. I got pulled over for speeding. This would have been, let's call it about a year ago almost. A little less than a year ago. I got pulled over for speeding. And Phil, I will tell you, the officer that pulled me over did everything in his power to try to rile me or try to get me out of my element, to try to get me to react. When I tell you he tried everything, he went as far as to say to me, you know, you're a big guy. And Phil, I don't consider myself a big guy. You're a big guy, so I'm going to put the cuffs on you just so that I'm safe. Over a traffic stop, okay? Now, to your point, Phil, yep, I didn't say anything. I complied. I said, okay, whatever you say. I did tell him, hey, you're the police officer, fine. If that's what you want to do, I don't see how that's necessary. But hey, I obviously don't have a say-so in the matter. He proceeded to put cuffs on me and then tell me, now go ahead and get in the car. I'm sure you've been back there plenty of times before. Now, my instinct was, I was livid, Phil, that this dude is talking to me in this manner over a speeding violation. Just doing everything in his power to try to get me to rile up. Now, to your credit, to your point, I didn't buy in. I didn't bite it. Yes, sir. No, sir. Even though on the inside, I couldn't even see straight. I was so mad. Okay? Now, that's just me based on my limited experience. Now, I can't say any and everybody would handle it the same way. I guess my point is this. I can't blame Cephalosha because somebody else was wrong. I can't put that on him that it's your responsibility because somebody else was wrong. You know, if somebody's coming at you in a particular situation, a particular way, and they're the one that's incorrect, they need to be the ones held accountable. Not me. I have to be held accountable because you came at me wrong.
But see, that's what I'm saying. I don't think they came at him wrong. Again, if a cop tells you to comply and you don't, they have to use force. I mean, they can't just say, he didn't comply, let's leave, guys. No, you have to use force to get them to do what you want to do. You're an officer of the law. If they don't obey what you do, you have to take it to the next level.
Okay.
I mean,
that's fine.
I just cannot understand. I mean, to me, it's just clear as day.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know why, you know, I understand it, and a lot of people don't.
Okay.
But I comply with police officers.
So,
I mean, it's just...
So I give you that. They had to use force, but did they have to break his leg?
Did they say the club is what broke the leg?
Well, they're doing an investigation.
Because
that
it didn't... Okay.
It hasn't been determined.
It just didn't look like a blow... I mean, you couldn't even tell if it hit the leg. You know, what I saw, it didn't look like it was forceful enough to break the leg. But, I mean, you don't know. But I wouldn't have said, if I would have watched that video, I would not have said he would have been seriously injured.
Right.
But I didn't hear that they came out and said that's what broke the leg or if he broke it, you know, just with him twisting him around, you know, and trying to get him on the ground.
Right. Well, it's suspicious enough that, you know, it's a full-on investigation. The Players Association is getting involved. They're having their people look into it. Because, like I said, you know, how this differs in other cases is, you know, this directly impacts, you know, this gentleman's ability to work, to provide for his family. You know, that directly impacts what he does for a living. And makes it difficult for him to be able to do that. So it's a, you know, there's that nuance in there that twists it a little bit, and makes it a little different. Like I said, it's a crazy situation, and I would be the first to admit there's got to be something in there that we don't know, you know, that hasn't surfaced yet. Because, like I said,
there usually is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you could explain to me how two people from two different teams get stabbed on the same night at the same club. It's just crazy to me, you know. So there's obviously something was going on. And to your point, the cops obviously didn't just walk up to Cephalosha and start wailing on him. You know, that something happened, something was said. There was a confrontation of some sort, you know. And he was charged. Any number of charges seemed to be brought against him. I think he was arrested for... interference in an investigation, obstruction of justice, I'm sorry, refusing arrest, and I forget what the other charge was, but it's going to be interesting how this all pans out. And like I said, it's unfortunate if you're an Atlanta Hawks fan, because you know they were going to have a shot to do something special. Coming down the stretch.
And didn't they lose another player too to injury?
They very well may have. I know that when Cephalosha was out earlier in the year, they still played well. But as we just talked about it, I mean, playoffs are completely different. And you know what? Cephalosha is a defensive specialist. You know, forget about his offense. Although he does have a legitimate outside shot, he's a great defender. And if you talk about the people that the swing men that are in the East, you know, you got to go up against LeBron James. Who's going to cover him? Well, Cephalosha would have been the guy that would have covered it. You know, those are the types of things that you have to look at. And that's why it's a devastating blow, in my opinion, a devastating blow to the Hawks and their playoff hopes. But we will just have to see how that goes. Matter of fact, tomorrow night, folks, pay close attention to your NBA sports ticker or the NBA channel, whatever you do to watch, because that eighth seed in the West comes down to tomorrow night. If New Orleans wins, they're in. If OKC wins and New Orleans loses, then they're in, and we'll know what that eighth seed looks like. Hey, folks.
So if they both lose, you said the Pelicans make it, right?
Yep, if they both lose or if they both win, the Pelicans own the tiebreak. And if you're OKC, that right there tells how ridiculous your plight is. You let the New Orleans Pelicans have the tiebreak over you for the season. That's a joke in and of itself. But hey, neither here nor there. It all gets hashed out tomorrow. Folks, been a great, great show. Thanks so much for listening if you have. If you like what you heard tonight and you want to hear this show again and all others, be sure to check us out on iTunes. Also, for a great follower to give you all your sports updates, check us out on Twitter at PO Show Radio. Or you can even check us out on the show page, www.poshowradio.com. You've been listening to the PO Show, Polar Opposites, with Big T and Cool Hand Phil, right here on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be back next week to do it again, folks. Good night.